The date today is the 3rd of June, 2013, and I'm meeting with Len Lewis, whose family bought the house in 1963, and Len was 10 years old. And your brothers at that time were 8 and 13. So thank you very, very much. You did mention to me that you submitted a request that one of the lanes be named after your family, and it's been accepted. And on the 15th of June of 2013, you're going to have the naming. Please tell me, what made you think that your family should be honored in that way? What was special?
What was special is because I would have really wanted to sort of honor and remember my parents, actually. When we first moved here from a small town called St. Mary's, Ontario, to Toronto, my parents were elderly at that time, and they were just really hardworking immigrants.
Immigrants from where?
Of Chinese descent. Uh-huh. Yeah, from really the Toisan district, which basically where much of the Chinese population came to, for various reasons, to go to the Golden Mountain looking for the gold rush or building the railroad across Canada. Mm-hmm. So those were the indigenous people who basically came from the Toisan area to work in North America. That was the province in China. So anyway, to honor them, I just wanted to pay some respect to them, really. So when we first moved here back in 63, we were, as far as I remember, one of two Chinese families in the area. There was a Lee family just down the street at 37 Major Street, but growing up here, I didn't really recall that many Chinese people really, right? So I just thought it would be befitting to honor them. Respect.
They lived at 37 and you lived at 52 Major.
Yes.
So you were quite close to them, physically.
Yeah, we went to, they were younger than I, so I knew that we sort of hung out sort of together when we were kids, but so obviously as time went on, we never really knew them. I just know them as Walter Lee and his sister. Yeah, I believe they're still there.
When you went to school, were there any other Chinese families, Chinese children at that time?
Yeah, there were Chinese families, but they weren't actually in the in our local area. There's, some of them, I think one was actually on Brunswick Avenue, I believe. What, some of them were done, maybe down on Darcy, Cecil, towards Chinatown. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, the Chinatown that was to be, yeah, because the old Chinatown back then was still on Chestnut and Dundas, and the Spadina Chinatown had not really emerged yet, actually, as a vital economy.
So your parents bought this place on Major Street 50 years ago, a long time ago, and there were very few other Chinese families. Do you have any idea what made them buy in that neighborhood and not where there were more Chinese families?
Honestly, I have no idea. You know, my dad, apparently, he just took a bus from St. Mary's, Ontario, which is actually near Stratford, took a bus and came back and purchased a home in cash, apparently. My mother was really upset because that was a lot of money back then. I think back then it was worth, I think he paid $14,000 or $16,000 in cash back in 1963. So that probably depleted the whole savings. Because we at that point, my parents had a restaurant. It's called the Lewis Cafe in St. Mary's, Ontario. So they sold the business in order to move to Toronto.
Do you any understanding of why they chose to leave, to come here?
Oh, they chose because my father was elderly at the time. So my father was already pushing 68 that year. Mm-hmm. We were from a small town of 5,000 people, a Scottish town called St. Mary's, Ontario. So actually, this is where all the building material came around and developing much of part of the area of Stratford, southern Ontario. So it was a quarry. There was two quarries there, which they were mining the stones to build the municipal buildings, etc. So I believe a decision was made because my father was getting elderly. We were children going up, and my mother, I guess, wanted to really to come to a larger place for the benefit of us and. And maybe for her also, the whole family, that's all I recall, actually.
So he came here, he bought the house, he went back to St. Mary's and said, we own a home.
Yeah, that's as far as I recollect, yeah.
And your family moved here in the summer of 63. There were already five of you, clearly. Did you use the whole house, or were there other people who eventually moved into the house with you?
My parents ran it as a boarding house to back then, because it was, either we paid it outright in cash, or they were struggling, actually, because when my mother came, she had no command of the English language.
Did your father speak some English?
No, had a little bit. See, that's what I'm really amazed at. He had a very limited command of the language, too. And yet, he went here, purchased up a home, did all this, really, when came back, really, did all that.
Where were you and your brothers born? Were you born in Canada?
We were born in Canada, in St. Mary's, Ontario.
Okay, yep. I see. So their English was very limited, yet he came, bought a house, went back, and brought you all here.
That's correct, yeah. Yeah, he did a lot of things. The same thing, when he was married earlier, and his first wife had passed away. So back in the 1949, I believe, he decided, he was in St. Mary's with his brothers at the time, in St. Mary's, opening up a restaurant. He actually started out west in Victoria and actually migrated east. Actually, he was 10 years old when he came. No, 14. Yeah, 14. 1910 he came. He came looking for his dad, who was in Seattle, Washington.
And he never went back.
Never went
back. Did he find his dad?
Yeah, oh yeah, he did. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm. Well, he sponsored. I guess my grandfather would have sponsored. He went back when he was 10 years old. That's mm-hmm. right. So,
your family moved to Toronto. What work did your father do? I mean, he couldn't continue his restaurant. That was quite far away.
See, that was a struggle too, actually. So my father got a job as a sort of a cook. It was at the 300 Tavern. Now the 300 Tavern, which is basically located at Robert and College, it's what it is now, it's called the Rancho Relaxo.
Yes.
That's the 300 Tavern. That was the 300 Tavern. That's where my father worked, actually. And it was so close, because we went to Lansdowne, which was actually called Lord Lansdowne later.
Uh-huh.
So he worked for a few years, maybe 4 years there.
And what did he do after that 4 years?
He retired.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he was pushing on 70. Yeah, mid-70s, actually. Yeah.
Okay. So you went to Lord Lansdowne. So I'm going to move into your education now. When you went to school, I want to backtrack. What language did you speak at home?
English. Chinese, actually. Not really. Chinese, English. But the thing was, which is actually... good Lord. See, when we were growing up, as kids in St. Mary's, my father and mother, they ran the family business, which was the restaurant. But, they were so occupied with the business. My father would probably begin work at, 7 in the morning, type up the new menu. The restaurant wouldn't close until 11-ish, So really long hours, let's say 15, 16 hours a day, really. So they really didn't have much time with us. Same with my mother, really, right? She didn't have no language, because she was basically a recent bride from China, really. Because that's why my father went back to China looking for a second wife, you see. Back in 1949-50, when my brother was born, actually. Yeah, that's when my mother came, actually, So she had quite the shock for her from China coming here. No language, just
Did
Chinese.
Did she also raise your father, the children from your father's family? No. They were already grown up.
They were grown up and on their own, that's correct, yeah. Uh-huh.
So she was a stay-at-home mom?
Or just contributed to the function of the family restaurant, mm-hmm. the usual Chinese Canadian restaurant mm-hmm. in a small town. So that being said, we never got to learn Chinese very well, which was really creates a very dysfunctional family, actually. So that being said, because of our limited language, we had a huge language barrier, actually, because, as kids, we just grew up with the local peers. We just spoke English, but actually, because my parents were so busy, we really didn't have much to converse about. And that over time, during our formative years of trying to learn the language, I certainly had really forgotten, not forgotten, but never really learned the language. So there was huge language barriers as we grew older over time, really, right?
But your mother didn't speak English. Did she understand English?
Not really.
Uh-huh.
No.
A strange communication in your head.
It was very rudimentary on our communication. Yeah, you know, it was sad in many ways for as I realized down the road. You know, I just lacked the language skills to converse on any deeper level.
So was your family able to have some kind of community with other Chinese speaking people? I mean, could your mother have some friends? Is what I'm asking.
She had, you know, not really, actually. She was basically a stay-at-home mom. She's, you know, she wasn't a stay-at-home mom. She worked when she came to Toronto. Because of a lack of language, she got whatever low-paying labor job there was, you know, which probably would have been like $4 to $6 an hour.
Not easy.
No, it was not easy. No. I remember she said she was just struggling, you know, just to put food on the table, etc. You know,
yes,
that's why she ran the boarding, the houses.
That's
the boarding
just place. What I'm coming to. Obviously, because your father was somewhat elderly, and he retired, so you needed money to come in. So, okay, how many floors are there in your house?
At the time, there was four included the basement. So three floors. Second, and third.
You were a family of five, three sons and two parents. Where did you all live in that building of three plus?
We lived on the ground floor.
All five of you?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And then were these strangers who lived with you or family?
No.
On the second and third floors?
They were strangers.
Uh-huh. And that was enough to help the family get through and pay for food and the essentials of life.
That's right, or to help them save for whatever they needed to do at the end.
But it shows how important it was for your father to own property.
Yes.
That he took everything that he had and bought a house with it.
That's right. I guess back then, exactly, maybe he didn't understand what a mortgage was, or, you know, I suppose a lot of things, the mentality was, if you could afford it, you buy it, or you just buy it outright, right? There's no point in owing somebody any money, I guess.
That's right. What was it like for you? As you said, there was one other Chinese family, and then when you went to school, there were some others.
Yes.
What was it like for you being in a neighborhood? Well, I'll backtrack again. Who else made up the neighborhood at that time?
Oh, it was predominantly, so as I recall, there was only the two Chinese in my immediate area on Major Street. There was lots of Portuguese family who are still there, Italians. There was the odd Jewish family, the Greenbergs, I remember. Predominantly Portuguese, and mainly Portuguese, actually. A few Italians.
And what was it like for you as a child going to school with these mainly Portuguese children? How was that? Get along well?
Yeah, I got along well, actually. I did, actually. Except I was the first so the first day of school, because you were the newbie. Mm-hmm. So the classmates, they were taunting me to get into a fight. So I got into a little fisticuff, probably during the first year I went to school. I got into a fight with this other small Asian person who's Japanese. I don't know, they sort of forced us to get into this little fight in the laneway between Major and Robert going up. Yeah, I remember today we had a little fight, and I'm not sure who ended up with the bloody nose, maybe I did, and that was the end of it. Really, you had people cheering people on, and it was the end of it. And then, you know, I talked to Dana years later, says, what was that all about? I said, he doesn't know either why... It just happened. I guess it was just part of some sort of initiation.
I'm wondering. It sounds that was the word that came into my mind when you said that.
Right.
Did the children realize that you were different from each other? You said you're Chinese and this person was Japanese. Did they? Do you have any idea what they were thinking?
No, not really, no. Yeah.
And then what happened with you and all the other children?
Well, we all became friends after that, actually. I don't know what... Yeah, I guess it was just a rite of passage, I suppose, really, just to get in there. Mm-hmm. Strange.
Did you go, in relation to the other children, did you go into each other's homes? Where did you play and how did you play?
We played on the... Oh, yeah, we played... The friends that I had were... Or from the street, from Major Street, let's say. We played on the streets, which is actually quite different than what it is these days, actually. During the summers, the City of Toronto had programs in Lansdowne, so that's sort of a summer. They had, I'm not sure what they were, counselors, so they just sort of ran activities during the day, which was great.
That's great.
It was great, yeah. We had baseball, we had... some track, we had...
So they organized... I mean, it was certainly not an affluent neighborhood, and the children could go to Lansdowne and have organized activities supervised.
That's right, exactly. But I believe each elementary school had that, because we used to have competitions against other schools. Certainly they don't have that kind of stuff anymore, I don't think.
I don't think so.
No, it was great. It was a great gathering place to meet people, you know, and just to... expend your energy, actually. So the activities that we did on the street, all sorts of silly games that we wouldn't even... I don't think children of today would know. So we had something called tops.
Yeah.
They were basically a top, uh-huh. about yay big. Uh-huh. You wrap a string around... We were very destructive when we were kids. So basically, the idea was to spin the top, but the idea was actually to demolish your opponent's top. Right, but it had to spin.
Spin, and yeah. then whack it against theirs?
Well, you whack the top, it would be lying on its side, and we would whack it, because basically the top had a metallic point, uh-huh. and that's what you would try it. And then it would spin, and then you would pick it up, apparently, and then hit it again in order for you to continue on playing.
Would it actually destroy the others, or just push it over?
Well, the intention was to try to...
Did you make these or did you buy them?
We bought these tops, actually.
But then you would destroy them and you had to buy some more.
That's correct. You have to replace them. Exactly. Yeah. But the other game that I don't see any children play, maybe, is horse chestnuts. Horse chestnuts that grew out of the trees. So basically what we did was that, there it is, a destructive little game too. We get these hefty little chestnuts. We either attach a string to it. We put it on the sidewalk, and our idea was to whack the chestnut and break your opponent's chestnut. So either we attach with a string, uh-huh. or possibly attach through a coat hanger.
And whack them. Did you eat the chestnuts or roast them or something?
Oh, no, they're poisonous.
Oh, are they?
The horse chestnuts that are on the streets right now. Uh-huh. Yeah, okay. No, only the squirrels can eat them. Uh-huh. Oh, I remember my mother, actually, when she first moved to Toronto, she said, oh, my God, look at all these chestnuts. But...
Not the kind you can eat, because I know chestnuts people do like to eat.
Edible, that's correct, uh-huh. yeah. Uh-huh. That's right.
And what were some other games that you played, besides whacking each other's chestnuts or tops?
Oh, we'd ride our bicycles everywhere, really, right? So,
Where did you play? You played at the school? Where
we
else?
Played at the school. We played on actual Major Street, actually. There was further Major Street... where the Kensington Garden is, actually, there used to be the Doctor's Hospital. Used to be also another. Yeah, we played in the local area, really.
What about the back lanes? Did you play in the lanes?
We actually didn't play in the lanes, really. We were more on the street, actually, because back then things were different. Actually, I imagine there were probably lesser cars, so the whole family life back in the '60s. Because I guess it was either the Portuguese or Italian community living there. The family that was actually in the front of the house, as opposed to now, it's sort of away from the front of the house, but rather a little bit more privacy. You would have your backyard, but back then you had the families on the porch, the children running around, making all sorts of noises on the street, on the streets, on the road.
It was a lively cityscape.
That is correct,
the parents on the front porch and the kids on the sidewalks, on the roads.
On the road or on the porch, exactly, yeah.
Did your parents sit on the porch? Did you sit on the porch?
I sat on the porch. My parents? Not so much, really, right? Mm-hmm. No, my parents were basically sort of stuck to themselves, more or less, really, right? So, yeah. But as, you know, growing up, as I said, all these activities growing up, because I would be on the street, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. With the other kids.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. Were you able to, or did you want to invite the children into your home at all, or did they invite you into their homes? Or was it all really on the street?
It was on the street, actually. You know. Mm-hmm. My parents weren't terribly receptive of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, the occasion I would go to a friend's house, but it was all basically all confined to
outdoors.
To the outdoor activities, that's right, yeah.
Did your family belong to any kind of church? Temple, anything?
No, but no, my parents, no, not at all. We went to a Presbyterian church actually to learn Chinese at one, but my parents never attended. My mother eventually later on in her life attended a Baptist church after my father passed away, but that was that, yeah.
The people who lived upstairs from you, you were five of you on the first floor. Mm-hmm. How many more people were living under your roof?
Good Lord.
No. At one time.
Oh, no, I'm just thinking one, two. Yeah, it took about 4 to 5 boarders. Mm-hmm.
Did they have a kitchen of their own, or did they eat in your kitchen?
No, they didn't have a kitchen. Sometimes my parents would make them something. Basically, that was really just boarding. It was really...
They had to eat their meals somewhere else.
Correct.
Did they have a refrigerator, do you know? Or do they share yours?
No. Uh-huh.
So all their meals were eaten at?
That's correct.
How many bathrooms were there?
It would have been a shared bathroom upstairs for them.
They all shared a bathroom with each other?
Yes.
Did you have a bathroom for your family?
Yes, yes, yes.
So your family had a bathroom and they had a second bathroom for the boarders?
That's correct, yes. Uh-huh.
What was happening downstairs in your basement? Something? Nothing?
Oh, actually, it was kind of strange, actually. Sorry. We actually had a family, sorry. We had the kitchen. We had a kitchen in the basement, that's what we used. In fact, the back half of the first floor was actually rented out to a family. A kitchen and a room.
So you were living...
We only lived... Actually, the front half of the first floor.
Okay. What was the sleeping arrangement? Did the three children share one space and your parents have another? Or
yeah, my parents would have shared the one area. I think my parents subdivided, put a partition between the living room. And I slept with my brother.
And another family behind you on the main floor.
Yeah.
Then about 4 or 5 more people upstairs.
Yeah.
Yeah. And your kitchen was downstairs.
Yeah, in the basement, that's correct, yeah.
There were a lot of people living under that roof.
That's right, there was.
Okay, so that's 50 years ago. Please give me a picture of, because you're living in that place now. So what's happened over the last 50 years in terms of who's lived there and the physical situation? Because I know that you've divided it into some apartments or something, so please describe the changes.
Yeah, so the early 80s came around. I guess my father was still alive then. I guess my father always wanted to have a new home, so she and my father were able to purchase a home. Can you believe that? Cash again.
Where was the home they bought?
On Nassau Street, right next to the Toronto Restaurant.
Yes, I know that place.
Yeah, so they bought it in 1980, a home.
But they didn't sell the one
they didn't sell Major Street, no.
So they bought another house, aren't they? Isn't that amazing?
It's truly amazing.
Yeah.
Like, so obviously my mother held the financial reins She did. She couldn't trust my father.
Why?
Because he spent money, and I think also that she was fearful that he would
lose it,
or help support his first family.
Oh, okay.
Because so actually, my mother would just separate, because she was obviously concerned with her immediate family as opposed to. That's probably why she took over the financial reins. Uh-huh. But after all, after those years, 18 years, they managed to scrip and save and paid cash for the house.
So they moved to Nassau, and you stayed on Major?
My brother and my sister-in-law stayed at Major Street. I moved to Nassau for a little bit, then I left and came back to Major Street. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it was at that time, I guess, during the middle 80s, because it was actually, it needed to be retrofitted, actually, because there was, so decided to totally renovate the place, actually. And basically, at that time, actually, my sister-in-law was living there. What else did we have? My brother was there at one point. We had some other family members from China that came. Basically, it would have been the children of, there would be my step nephews, actually, from my father's first marriage.
Uh-huh.
Their son, his my father's eldest son, who lived in China. Both of them actually served in the war, World War II, for the Americans, because they had fought for the American forces, actually. Whereas one of them stayed on, got his architectural landscape architecture degree. The eldest one wanted nothing to do with America, went back to China, to communist China.
Boy, your family has a lot of interesting stories and history.
And my father tried all these years to get his side, the first side of the family over, right? Which I don't. Yeah, I was too young. He made trips to Ottawa, even with the lack of language, trying to get them over. It's probably during that point, during the 60s, he tried for quite a few years, 60s, 70s, tried to get them over, really, right? But I guess my husband, during the Liberal government, that they allowed more migration of people from Asia, and then,
So he wanted to sponsor them?
Yes, yes.
And it was difficult.
Yeah. And it's really probably not even know all the legal wranglings, but they did. He did sponsor the. They did come actually. Two of them came over,
mm-hmm.
And they live in the same house where we. And then.
So you got to know your father's first family, or some of them.
I got to meet the older stepbrother. Eventually, because he was able to migrate to America along with his wife, because I believe because they had served with the armed forces.
Oh, so they earned that.
Yeah, I guess so. They allowed to go. Yeah. That was the easier way. And then the parents were able to come and take the children with them. So they're all actually living in California, San Francisco.
So you have family to visit there if you want to.
Yeah.
Let's come back to the changes. You moved into this house 50 years ago. In the 80s, you did some major renovations.
Yes.
Can you describe what you've done, some of the changes, and who's living there now?
Did some major renovations, like in fact, total renovations. We gutted the whole place out and made it into separate units, actually, to which we could all live, actually. So basically, it's four units. Mm-hmm. It's four.
And where are you? So it's each floor is another unit, I suppose.
Yeah, so basically...
where are you living?
The first floor mm-hmm. is one unit, mm-hmm. including a third of the basement. Uh-huh. Second and third floors are bi-level apartments whereby... so the front half... apartment where Anne lives is the front half of the
and who's Anne?
She's my, I guess, tenant and friend.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
She lives in the front half and the second and the third floor. I live on the back half of the second and third floor.
Uh-huh. What an interesting thing to have done rather than one floor per as a unit they have, as you say, bi-level.
Uh-huh. Because the third floor is smaller than the second floor, so it would have been difficult, really, mm-hmm. I suppose. So right now my niece lives there with her family on the ground floor. I live in the back half of the second and third floor.
And Anne lives in the front of the second and third floor.
Yeah, so they're totally self-contained mm-hmm. apartments, actually. And
redone in the 80s.
Redone in the 80s, that's correct, yes. Uh-huh.
And your brothers, I guess you own it with your brothers, or did you buy it from them?
Well, actually, though, it's concurrently owned by me and my two brothers, house.
Yeah. So your parents left it to the three of you.
That's right.
Yeah.
They all have homes except me. They all have homes already, but I'm the only one that doesn't actually have a home other than this one.
Yeah.
So my brother lives at the East End. My older brother lives in Burlington with his wife. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And. Still adult children.
Yeah. Well, those of us who live in this neighborhood are very happy to live here. So, you know, your brothers have moved away, but you're in a neighborhood that many of us like very much. That's why we're here.
Yeah, absolutely, exactly. Well, yeah, my brother lived in Burlington all his life, but after he graduated from school, really, right, it was just part of, I guess when he finished school, he ended up working at Stelco, so basically... that sort of whole Hamilton mm-hmm. area where my brother, he wanted a home on his own, but he was out west actually, west Toronto, but he sort of decided east was his thing. Mm-hmm. It was probably more affordable for him, so he liked it too. Yeah. I mean, there was a whole migration of people going to the east around Pape and Queen area, really, right? There was a whole movement of people, probably the same time as what was happening in little pockets throughout Toronto, really, right? Picking up some homes, doing some renovation, and making it a really livable communities. Mm-hmm. Around Leslieville.
Yeah.
That's where
it was. Well, Toronto has a lot of very lovely livable areas.
Correct. Oh, yeah.
What do you feel about the safety of this neighborhood? The way it was and the way it is now.
I've never had a problem. I thought it was always safe. I certainly, you know, it was different back then. In the 60s, growing up as a child, I don't recall any sort of crime per se mm-hmm. or break-ins.
And now, how do you feel about it right now?
There was about 20 years ago, there was and say a bit of vandalism, I suppose, you know. I don't know where the kids came from, whether it was from tech or whatever, you know, they were scratching cars, slashing tires. 5 years ago, there was more than that, 10, 15 years ago perhaps, someone tried to break into my home, actually, to the startlement of my tenant back then.
Did they actually get in, or did they get frightened off because somebody was there?
Yeah, got frightened off. They came through the side window.
Yeah. So and your tenant made herself or himself clear that somebody was there.
Yeah. It was quite the fright, I would imagine.
I'll bet. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're saying, I think that those incidents happened, but I think you're saying that you feel that it's a safe
neighborhood. Oh, it is safe. There's just isolated. Yeah. Probably any neighborhood really has isolated crime elements, really, right? But on the whole, I think it's very safe. I think that's why people, in fact, reside here because of its of its beauty, its lack of any crime element, its proximity to a lot of things downtown, the market, Kensington Market, Chinatown, entertainment district. I like this area. I could not fathom to move further south, which is the Rogers Center. Oh my God, I can't believe it's so high density there. Well, anyway, all the places, I guess Liberty Village, they all seem like really high density areas. This is, I love the idea that you could actually walk in on the ground level.
I you've just described exactly how I feel about it. I love living here. And I can walk, or I can, if I want to go to TIFF, I can go there easily, either walk there or just get on the streetcar going.
That's south. Right.
There's so much to walk to in this
That's
neighborhood.
Right.
And the Bloor Cinema.
That's right, exactly.
Tremendous.
Yeah, because I get around by walking or bicycling. Probably my favorite, though I have a vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I love, well, vehicle is there because I need it sometimes, really, right? So it's a luxury. Oh, I wouldn't say a luxury item. Yeah, it's a luxury because I don't really need it, I suppose. Yeah. But it's there if you need it in a snap. I suppose one could go to auto share or Zipcar, but...
I feel the same way. I use the subway, I walk, I use my bike, and I like having my car when I want it.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, yeah. I do most of my... I'm not a great walker, Eleanor. I like the bike. It's more efficient.
It is.
And I can get there much quicker.
What were your feelings or thoughts when the roads got changed? When you lived here at first, you could go straight from Bloor to college or college to Bloor. What are your thoughts about the changes that happened?
I guess in the beginning, actually, I probably didn't like it because it was sort of an interruption, actually, whether it be vehicular or... But, you know, in the end, it's great because maybe the whole issue of, I imagine, of segmenting the streets was to... The number one priority was to slow traffic down, really, right?
Mm-hmm.
So people could, oh yeah, because I remember, yeah, cars just go speeding up the streets. Yeah, they would be full throttle. Really, right? I remember that.
So you're saying at first it felt inconvenient.
That's because it's like, you know, you had to get used to the change, actually. Yeah. Probably I didn't really think about the larger implications of why it was being done, really, that's all. It was an inconvenience at the time because I wasn't used to the change.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, I guess, it was difficult as a cyclist out because, you know, if you
if you pay attention.
That's right. I'm guilty of that, and I don't want to pay attention, but, you know.
Me too.
That was that. But, you know, for the car, sure, you just go around a little. Yeah, I'm interested why... Yeah, that's good. But I still see that people still speed up from college up to Ulster.
Yeah. What I see a lot of is on Sussex, there are a lot of cars that will go in the wrong direction. I mean, they're heading towards Spadina or they're heading from Spadina towards Brunswick. And they say, oh, well, really, I have to make a left or a right. I'm not going to bother. And I see a lot of them, the cars going in the wrong direction, especially on Sussex.
Oh, I see. Oh, yeah, I see what they don't want to be bothered Spadina. Going around in a loop in order to get out of the city. Yeah, okay, nobody's here. I'll make a quick little dash.
But I'm there and I'm watching.
Nobody's going to see it.
I'm usually there walking. I see that happening a lot. Did your family have a backyard? And if you did, what was behind your house?
It was a garage, a wooden garage, car garage, which actually burnt down.
Oh.
Electrical fire must have been burnt down. My parents never replaced it, so it became just an open lot.
Was it used at all for playing, for gardening, anything at all, or not used much?
No, it wasn't at all. It's still basically it's used as a carport now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my parents never drove either.
Uh-huh, yeah. Did you make some changes in the heating system?
Oh, yeah.
What did you
Absolutely.
Do?
Absolutely. So back then it was a forced gas furnace, which was very inefficient for it because it would be downstairs. So basically, no, in order to convert to, we wanted to convert it because I wanted to, I guess, number one, to live there. Secondly, to make it self-sufficient units. And the only way around it, I suppose, was to eliminate the idea of a forest furnace, but rather go baseboard electric heating.
So that's what you have.
That's what I have, yeah. Mm-hmm. With, you know, yeah, modern wire, modern plumbing, full amenities.
And know. What about air conditioning?
They're air conditioned. They're in the wall unit, in the window unit, not a central. Mm-hmm. Each pays for their own. Mm-hmm.
So each one is an independent unit in terms.
That's right.
Of
they have their own
hydro
meter, exactly.
Yeah.
And their own water bill, which is the way it just structured out, actually. It was good, actually, because when I remember renting it out, it was great, you know, because people would be just totally blown away by how much electricity they were consuming once they realized that they were actually on the toe for it, really, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, which was a great exercise in actually... obviously conservation for tenants.
That's right. If they're going to pay for it, they might not turn it on.
That's right, yeah. Exactly. It's the same thing with condo living, I guess. You know, it's always on full tilt, I suppose, really, right? It all goes as part of your condo management fees. It's probably run not that efficient, really, right? Yeah. Yeah, so everyone basically is sort of monitored to their own consumption of hydro, because that's really the major... Because you really, it's your, you got your appliances, you got your heating, and your air conditioning is all run by hydro.
But you were smart that way, because people will be more responsible.
Well, there was no other way at the time, really. We couldn't introduce a forced furnace unit, because then you had to install a furnace. Mm-hmm. And who controls the furnace, really, right? So...
I just want to talk about the kind of work that people did. As far as you knew, two questions. Were mothers working when you were... Were you aware of whether mothers were working, the women were working, when you were growing up?
I always thought that mothers worked, actually.
Uh-huh. Well, and your mother did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was your impression that the mothers were working.
That's right. Because basically, yeah, because I think we were all of immigrant families, I suppose. And that's I think everyone needed a dual income.
Yeah.
I didn't necessarily know people from another area, which would have been middle class at that. Might have been a stay-at-home mom or whatever, really, right? So,
did you know anyone who had what we call cottage industry, working at home, the men or the women, any kind of... Working at home, sewing or...
Yeah, whatever. Well, you know, I knew of my parents or my mother, or I was aware of some families that were doing piecemeal.
Sewing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, such as putting on sequins.
Wow, somebody was doing specialized work.
Uh-huh. I think anybody could do it. It's just tedious and laborious, really, right?
Yes.
So, yeah, those were all piecemeal. So you would... take them home, do it, and then...
So these were women who were working at home and doing that.
Yeah, uh-huh. That's correct, yeah. Yeah, 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 that, it was a sequence. I think my mom tried it. Sequence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What, how do you think the changes have occurred in terms of socioeconomic changes? Who was living here in 1963? Who was living here in 1993? And who's living here in 2013?
Well, back in the 60s, I think it was predominantly immigrant families living here. English was definitely not their first language. And probably a lot of them did not speak English. As the years progressed, actually, you had those families had moved on. Some of the Portuguese had moved on to other locations. Some of the Italians might have moved further up to St. Clair. Some of them might have moved up to Vaughan. I guess during the 80s we had renovators coming in, purchasing homes with the idea of a quick flip.
Yeah.
Yeah. That happened everywhere.
That happened a quick buck.
That happened in a lot of places. And then probably later on after that, because because the areas had very unique properties, I guess, people either from the burbs or they were downsizing, they came into downtown Toronto to live. I'm not quite sure if the right word is the gentrification of, yeah, of downtown Toronto, whereby so the immigrants had left because their idea, it probably included the Chinese, they migrated wherever the affluent was. So the people who lived downtown when they were young got a bit more money, they thought the affluence was to the burbs.
So that was a measure of their success to move north.
That's correct, yeah. Uh-huh. That was whatever nationality you were, really, right? So it was the opposite, probably, I'll just say WASP, whatever, whoever actually be part of that group, and they came to look downtown as a different thing. They renovated, they did their they did their own thing. That's what, the backyards became lovely. There was minus that activity that I grew up with the kids in the 60s, where all the activities were in the forefront of the porch house, which was just where the hub of activity was, really, right? There was still not really much activity on the street, which is fine, but that's just the times, I suppose. Back in the 60s, the Portuguese came from just like where my parents came. I think the Portuguese came from a certain area in Portugal.
The Azores, largely.
Was it?
Yeah.
And all the houses were all the bricks, facade, were all painted in these pastels, right? It was lovely, really, right? So it was a different feel, really, right? Whereas, during the 80s, 90s, paint was not in, so they all sandblasted it, tried to restore the Victorian nature. So it's I guess it's come full circle from what the families were at one point. I thought that actually there was a large Caribbean population here at one point in this area. I'm not sure if that's true or not, actually.
Not that I'm aware of.
Would say a large, but some of them.
Yeah.
No.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Could be. I don't. I'm not the expert. But and who's here now? You talked about the immigrants. They made a little money. They moved up north. They felt that they were moving to a better place, a better life. Who's here now?
I think probably the crowd here now is probably a little bit more definitely urbane, actually, more sophisticated, more educated. Definitely more educated.
You've been here through a lot of changes.
I've seen people from professors coming in, right?
Yeah.
From the U of T, look in, raise their family, so close proximity to the U of T. People who obviously, definitely more affluent, because my gosh, the real estate price, are you kidding me? There's no way on this planet. I mean, it's everywhere, I suppose, but I'm not even sure what the average price of a home here. We're talking $800 to $1 million, right? That's outrageous.
Yeah, when you consider that your father bought yours for cash for
$16,000. Yeah. But
Yeah.
Well, even the 1980s, early 80s, my house, untouched, would have been what you could have bought it for $54,000.
Uh-huh. And now much more. And of course you've
it would have been probably you probably just to buy without renting, probably a mil too. Probably renovated, probably a mil six.
Yeah.
Whatever, I don't know.
Yeah.
Because it's one of the few detached houses out on Ashland Street.
I'll have to go and look at it. That's a very lovely description that you gave of what it was like 50 years ago and the changes that have occurred since then.
Yeah. Oh, I remember as a kid, actually, on Victoria's Day, I was just telling people, the whole street was littered in red firecracker paper.
Oh, so everybody lit the firecrackers and left them there?
No, they would blow up, but there was much more pyro activity. Like, people just blue fire. I just think that maybe it's the sales of fireworks is restricted, mm-hmm. right? I mean, as a child, I could go with a child to a store and buy it when I was 10 years old. That is probably is not allowed.
Yeah, I guess a few bad accidents and
right.
they restricted
it. But I'm not sure what made us when we were kids growing up. I mean, things have changed, really. When you and I were growing up as kids, things were... I don't recall, but then again, there might have been. Maybe it's because of the press, because it's more open now. You could there's more revealing of what's happening. On the news or whatever, really. Cool. But I didn't really hear about any incidents. Not to say that there wasn't any incidents, or did kids misbehave more now than then? I don't know. You know, I mean, really, the family's allowed you to blow up things or whatever. You know,
children, I think, did have much more freedom. They were out on the street for hours at a time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it is different now. I don't think it's more dangerous. That's my own personal impression. That it's not more dangerous, but I agree with you that the media shares everything so widely, so rapidly, that anything that is bad, wrong, difficult, we hear about it 10 times a day.
Exactly. The accessibility of media, it's like CNN Live. Everything is just pumped through.
Breaking news,
that's right.
Please talk about Kensington Market and your family. Did your family use the market? And how did you
yes, but... Yeah, my parents went down to Kensington Market on Baldwin Street. Much different then. When you had actually, she used the bakery, the Portuguese bakery, where we bought our bread from the Portuguese. I remember like 6 cents, big piece of the Portuguese, sort of like a torpedo shape.
Right? Torpedo shape.
they go to Kensington Market to buy live produce, which would be like. Live chicken,
uh-huh.
live duck. I remember my father, if he didn't go to the market, he'd go down, you know, that market across from City TV on Queen Street? Well, that used to be a live market there. My father would go there and buy himself a chicken.
Bring it home live, or they would kill it there for him?
My father was always going, he'd buy it live. You could buy things live then.
And bring it home, and who would kill it and who would clean it? He killed it and he cleaned it.
Yeah. I was there. I saw all this. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you participate in it?
No.
Yeah.
No. I saw my dad do everything.
Did your dad do more cooking than your mother?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
He did. When my father was alive, yes. Because he was the cook that ran the Lewis Cafe.
Oh, that's right. So he had business. Been right before he came before that's they came right. to Toronto.
That's right. Yeah. Uh-huh. Now, the Lewis Cafe, actually, sorry, this was a sidebar. People always ask me, because there was a little thing on the, when we first talked about the label changes, I'm not sure if it was the Globe, about a Chinese family with a Lewis name. So they're asking, the improbable name of a Lewis. So my understanding, actually, how the Lewis, because my father's name is Lou, L-E-W or L-O-W, L-A-U, is that Chinese character. It's called, in Cantonese, it's called Lao. And in different dialects, it would be Lu. So my dialect is called, my parents spoke Toisan, because it's from the Toisan area in the Toisan district in the province of Guangdong in China, mm-hmm. Which is where all the immigrants came to. Because at that time, I guess, at the turn of the century, China, that was the only economically depressed area, I guess, and China allowed people from that district to emigrate mm-hmm. to North America. So it's a very choppy language. So you would get this stereotypical people mocking the Chinese language. You know, back then, I mean.
Yeah.
Because it is. It's very choppy. It's not like Mandarin, which is very soft-spoken, right? So... And anyways, the Lewis family, sorry. So my father's name is Lo, or Lao, whatever. So he had this cafe. My father didn't really have a great command of the language.
Of the English language.
That's correct.
Oh, good. Okay.
So he wanted a sign painter on his restaurant. I guess he wanted something called the Lou's Cafe. like L-E-W-I-S apparently, Lou's Cafe. But the St. Mary's, Ontario is really a Scottish town, really. So they must have didn't understand about my father. So he must have misinterpreted it. Must have, instead of Lou's Cafe, Lewis Cafe. So that's... So, but see, on my father's social insurance number, it's not Lewis. It's just old L-O-W. But on the hospital records for the children, it's all under Lewis, you see.
So the painter of the sign determined your family's name.
I guess that's what I gather, exactly.
Pretty influential person.
Yeah. So I guess it just stuck, you know, Lewis Cafe.
You know, I was going to ask you that question because it doesn't sound like a typical, it's more a Canadian name.
That's correct, yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. So, but I guess, you know, as any immigrant coming to North America or... No, this is North America. They would probably try to anglicize your name, regardless, yeah. Really, right? To make things simpler,
yeah.
Really, right?
It's such a common thing. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a story, and I like that story, actually. Whether somebody else decided that Lewis wasn't so fit, we'll just add an IS Lewis, but Lewis Cafe, that sounds. Because this was a story that was when I visited St. Mary's many years later after I left, we left to Toronto. There was one of the elderly citizens who knew my father. This is the story he told me, so so I got to take that
it's
as the gospel truth.
Yeah, that's the gospel truth. So Kensington Market was a factor in your lives. I mean, your father shopped there and went even south of there for his shopping. What about the University of Toronto? Do you have any thoughts about the university as our neighbor, just to the east of us?
Do I have any thoughts?
Yeah. Yeah, we're
well,
know.
I was aware of obviously the university. We used to go visit Varsity Stadium. We used to, but now it was less as a force to be reckoned with. Now, I mean, with the University of, everybody's aware of the University of Toronto these days now because of its relentless expansion. Actually, at the sake of. Where it is really, right? I didn't realize until quite a few years back that it's quite the extensive landholder.
Oh, yes.
Like in the quotes, an enormous amount of property in the area, really, right? So I guess it was just trying to exercise.
Flex its muscle.
Yeah, well, yeah, look at the, what do you call it? The one on Hoskin Avenue, the whole field. The development of the some new resident complexes along College Street. That's kind of crazy, really, right? Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't go to University of Toronto, but I guess I'm sure it's a great university, but it's just, it's being felt, its presence is being felt for sure as it expands.
Yeah. There are a lot of people in the neighborhood who have quite strong feelings about it as it expands, and it's, because it's our neighbor.
That's right, exactly.
And how's it affecting us? Yeah.
Absolutely,
so,
yeah.
So you seem to have some of those thoughts, too.
That's right, because we saw, the first development, it affected us quite a few. It was the swimming area, it was quite a big structure, but it was okay, I guess. You know, the swimming pool.
Just on Harbour and Spadina. Yeah.
And then later on, they had this sort of kind of ugly graduate housing complex across from it. That sort of bunker style, I don't know, but...
And of course there's a library, Robarts Library.
That's huge. Actually, you know, in the end I didn't really, didn't object to it too much. I know it's a huge piece of architecture, occupied a tremendous... And hate the wind drafts that it creates. That's probably why they planted the cherry trees or whatever trees that they have there. Because it used to be extremely wind tunnels there.
So they're trying to do something about it, to modify it, to improve the situation slightly.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah, that library, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe that's what it is. It looks like a big turkey from an aerial view.
It is.
It looks like a bird on an aerial view.
Yeah. when you and I spoke to each other and you said you had some time and we could talk about the neighborhood, I don't know if you had any thoughts about, oh, since I'm talking about the neighborhood, there's some stories I'd like to share with Eleanor. Was there anything that I have not asked about that you were thinking about that I just never got close to but would be interesting for us to include?
No, I think we covered most of it. I was just trying to get the stories of what life was like as children growing up 50 years ago as to the same children growing up now, where things are so different, you know. That's, you know. Yeah, there's moments. For instance, as I said on Victoria Day, it was just where, seriously, the streets were just covered in red, expended firecrackers. Completely.
So it must have been very lively and noisy while all those firecrackers were going off.
Yeah, it was great. Because you could purchase it. That people had those little baby fingers, Eleanor. You just light one. It comes out of a little sheet about that big. There are probably like 100 of them. And you just... Yeah, I don't even hear those anymore, actually.
Yeah, now they seem to, for the most part, have a few areas where they do a big show, and families aren't doing it, or streets aren't doing it as much as they used to be.
But we didn't even actually launch fireworks. These were firecrackers, as the name implies. It was to make sound.
Yeah. Well, I think we've covered pretty much everything. Oh, let me just one more question. The stores in the neighborhood, the commercial life in the neighborhood, stores, theaters, any thoughts? Now, you lived between college and
Ulster.
Can you talk about the stores?
Yeah, I bet some of the old stores where we were growing up. You know, the one on 90 Majors, as I came up walking up, Ulster and Major. That used to be a quarter store when I used to grow up. Like all these little quarters had quarter mama pop shops. I kind of miss those, actually.
And what did they sell in those shops? Those mama papa shops?
Just a little anything that was a convenience store, you know, popsicles, ice cream, probably a few, some canned goods, maybe some milk, some bread. But we just went and candy, of course.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Did you know the owners? Did they know you? Was that a personal experience, or was it just, okay, can I have 5 cents of candy?
Well, the one that I knew on a personal bit, her name was Anna, which was across on Robert Street, across from Lord Lansdowne. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we would go there, buy Lola bars. She would also, they would make sandwiches on Kaisers too, right? So it was all very inexpensive back then. Yeah.
She was a major factor in the neighborhood, Anna.
Yeah.
Other people have spoken to me about her.
That's right, yeah. I think, oh my gosh, she must have been there for, I don't know, the last time I saw her was probably, I don't know, quite a few years ago. She's probably passed away, but I, yeah.
But you remember
She was an institution there.
Yeah.
All the kids would go, you know, either after school or during lunchtime would go to her little store, really, right? To buy candy, all sorts of little things, really.
What do you remember about her?
She was always a wonderful lady, always smiling. She was blonde hair, obviously European background, but too young to know, to tell you what nationality she may have been. She could have been Polish or some of that area, you know, Yeah, she would always have the stuff prepared for you because you knew she was going to be bombarded by what children coming
at
in.
Lunchtime,
right? Yeah, purchasing things of that thing, you know. Yeah, we would use her laneway, which is now blocked off, as a shortcut to come home from school, right? A lot of people use that, yeah. The whole on College Street has changed. What I remember growing up, the Home Hardware store, which is, okay, this is actually where my 300 Tavern, where the Rancho Relaxo, where the Home Hardware store is now. Mm-hmm. Well, that used to be, growing up, it used to be, we went there as a pool hall. It was called the Gardens Pool Hall. Then it became a dojo, like a martial arts thing, and then it became a theater. Cinema Lumiere, I don't know if you ever heard of it.
Yes.
Yeah, that's where it was. Cinema Lumiere. and that its latest incarnation is the Home Hardware Store, and where on College and Bathurst, that whole strip from Major, there was another pool hall at the corner of College and Brunswick. It was in the basement. It's kind of dingy and dark. It was called The Hole. We called it The Hole.
What was its real name? Was that its real name?
Well, we all called it. If we all said we're going to The Hole, we know that was The Hole. We played billiards or pool when we were young, actually. So we would have been... Yeah, you could go there 12, 13 years old, mm-hmm. go there. Mm-hmm. So you play for money.
Big gambling.
Big gamblers, yeah. Exactly. Right. And then where Kaplansky's is,
yeah.
That used to be, I miss it, years ago. It used to be Harvey's.
A Harvey's Hamburger?
Yeah, that's right. Then became the Golden Lion. And what was it? Yeah, I remember it. Harvey's, that was great. And the Major at College, with the computer store, it's now Frank's Hot Dog. That used to be Weinstein's drugstore, right? That was my first job.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was on my bicycle and I deliver a prescription to whoever he sent me to. First paying job, Eleanor. 65 cents an hour.
How old were you?
11.
Well, you're a young earner.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, I think it was my first paying job.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and then one of my first paying jobs was working at Silverstein's Bakery on McCall Street. Yeah.
And what did you do there?
One summer. Oh my God! I was near the ovens.
Ugh.
It was hot. It was brutal. I think it was 1969 back then. Oh, just stuffing.
And you were young.
I was 15, 16.
Yeah. You were stuffing...
Kaisers.
Into bags?
Into bags, or cutting up, putting the loaves of bread into a cutter. And then, yeah, just stuffing, yeah. That's all it was.
Yeah.
I remember some of the people working there. Oh, it was just brutal. It was so hot.
Oh, the oven.
By the oven?
Summer. Oh, because it was 100 degrees in there.
Oh, more. It was ruthless. It was bad. And on Spadina Avenue, I remember all sorts of... My both brothers worked at Switzer's, the deli.
Uh-huh.
And across, that would have been on the west side. On the east side would have been Shopsy's.
Uh-huh.
And next to Shopsy's would have been an LCBO. So back then, the LCBO, not like they are today, it was probably had a very limited... order sheet, so you'd actually tick off what you wanted and you give it to the clerk behind and they'd get it for you.
Really? Oh boy, that's changed.
Canadian Tire on Davenport and Church used to give you order, and people back then, same thing, they would be on the rollerblades. They get your stuff for you, right? On the four, yeah. And next to Switzer's, I guess by the Bank of Nova Scotia, that used to be a lumber yard, Central Lumber. Yeah.
And any other memories of our part of College or Spadina? What was there, or what's there now?
A lot of that whole strip between Brunswick, Robert, has remained intact, actually, except, yeah. Yeah, because Home Hardware had been there for... probably since I remember as a child, actually, until it decided to...
just move east.
Yeah,
because
it was actually purchased by a new owners, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Certainly a lot of computer stores there now.
That's right, yeah, the computer stores proliferated. I'm not even sure when they proliferated, actually. Probably the 90s, I guess, yeah. There's really only one dominant player there, actually. Now, a lot of the ones have sort of moved on because there's so much competition, really, that you can have, really, right? So,
last question. What about restaurants? Are there restaurants that your family used, didn't use, or that are just notable for some reason or other?
I don't know where my parents took me. I remember the Mars restaurant. Yeah, because that's just... It's been there for ages, really, right? Same with the Harvard Bakery. I don't remember the restaurants.
Really. So Harvard Bakery and Mars have both been there a very long time.
Really long time, yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
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 Well, Len Lewis of Major Street for 50 years. This has been a pleasure. I thank you very much.
Oh, it's a pleasure talking to you.